you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tracy from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Are you a small business owner or even someone who dreams of entrepreneurship? Then check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from iHeart Podcasts and Intuit QuickBooks. Join hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres as they interview entrepreneurs sharing insights around starting and nurturing a small business. You won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels family of 22 brands has over 7,400 locations and the perfect hotel for any traveler you want to be. Like a Cambria Hotel serving up locally inspired craft cocktails for all my folks who maybe want to meet up and talk about Mad Royals. Check into a Radisson Hotel with flexible workspaces for you strivers who listen during business travel. Or a Comfort Hotel with free hot breakfast, family-friendly pools, and big spacious rooms for the parents who listen with their kids and need a little retreat. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you when you book direct at choicehotels.com, where travels come true.
Looking to part ways with complicated, expensive, and uncertain shipping? Then give your business the edge it needs with USPS Ground Advantage shipping from the United States Postal Service. Keep everything simple with clear upfront pricing and no unexpected surcharges. Keep things affordable with some of the lowest prices out there. And keep it all reliable with on-time ground shipments. It's time to turn shipping to your advantage. Learn how at usps.com/advantage. USPS Ground Advantage. Simple, affordable, reliable.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Sarah Dowdy.
And I'm Deblina Trucker-Bordy. And when we left off with the Bourbon series last, Louis XIII and his chief advisor, Cardinal Richelieu, who's also known as the Red Eminence, had passed away just within a few months of each other in 1642 and 1643, making Louis XIV king. And much like Richelieu, Louis XIV, who's also known as the Sun King or the Grand Monarch, you could probably do an entire series just about him. His wars, his expansion of French territory, and of course, his mistresses. But the truth is, since he's one of France's most famous monarchs, you've probably come across at least some of that info before. I mean, it probably is not something that you missed in history class.
Yeah, probably not. But as we mentioned in the last episode, you can't do a series on the Bourbon family and leave out Louis XIV because, I mean, he essentially defines the family. So in this episode, we're going to focus on his court at Versailles during the very height of his reign and how it reflects some of his contributions to French society. But we're also going to focus on a dark scandal, which I guess sort of shows the underside of his reign of power, and a mystery of sorts called the Affair of the Poisons. I don't if that doesn't make you intrigued, I don't know what will. And this little mystery completely shocked and disturbed the French court at this time, and also marked a turning point for the king. So, here we
but
go.
Before we get there, as usual, we're going to start at the beginning and just give a little bit of background on Louis XIV. Even though you may know some of this, we just want to kind of set the scene for this affair of poison so that you know maybe what led up to it and what was going on at the time. So just a little recap from last episode. Louis XIV was born September 5th, 1638, and at the time he was called God-given. It was a really big deal at the time because it came after a pretty big dry spell for his mother, who was Anne of Austria, and Louis XIII. They hadn't had any children up to that point, so people considered Louis XIV a visible divinity almost. They thought that his birth was almost a miracle. And since he was only five when his father died, though, Anne ruled as regent alongside Prime Minister Cardinal Jules Mazarin, who she had handpicked to advise her.
So it's interesting, it's kind of the same setup that Louis XIII had when he became king, coming to the throne as a young boy, with his mother serving as regent, with an advisor who had a whole lot of power. The big difference here, though, is that unlike Richelieu, Mazarin wasn't falling in and out of favor with the queen. He did have a lot of enemies, though, and namely, those enemies were the French nobles. We know the nobles, they're always stirring up trouble.
They really are.
And a lot of this trouble started under Richelieu, whose policies of the monarchy reduced the influence of the nobility. You know, I mean, he was all about the absolute power of the king. So,
exactly.
So some of the nobility and the judicial bodies, such as the parliaments, were feeling a little bit disenfranchised, like they had sort of lost out and they're ready to get a little something back.
So they decided to do something about it, and they staged a series of civil wars known as the Fronde against the crown. And though the Fronde was ultimately unsuccessful, Louis had to grow up in the midst of all this. He grew up in the midst of nobles rebelling against him, and this atmosphere definitely made an impression on him. And by most accounts, he was neglected also as a child, brought up mostly by servants. So it definitely colored his vision, I think, of the future and how he wanted to rule.
He wanted to be secure and powerful in his future, and that's definitely going to come into play. But Mazarin continued to rule even after Louis XIV came of age. But after Mazarin died in 1661, Louis shocked the country by telling everybody, all of his ministers, everyone, that he intended to rule for himself. This is unheard of. The king is supposed to maybe dabble in ruling or have certain strong suits if it's like economic stuff, military stuff, but then spend a lot of his time enjoying being king. To decide to take it all on himself sounded ridiculous.
Right, but from his perspective, Louis XIV saw himself as God's representative here on earth, and you know, maybe because he had heard similar things to that from a young age, but he basically thought that this gave him the right to rule as a dictator, essentially.
An absolute monarch. And from that point on, he really set out to control every aspect of what was going on in France. The military decisions, the economy, the cultural life. And he does, you know, obviously he has some advisors. He has a few ministers around him to help him out, but he really works hard. He works at it like a full-time job, spending 8 hours a day just devoting himself to all the little details of what's going on in the kingdom.
Right, and it was really every little detail. So as we mentioned, Louis XIV was known for a lot of things, including going to war a lot, especially with the Netherlands, in an attempt to expand his territories. On his deathbed, in fact, he was remembered as saying, "I have loved war too much." But he's also credited with bringing a contemporary conception of luxury, probably a lot of how we think of France, especially Paris today, I think, to the country. I saw it described in one source as actually elevating lifestyle to fine art, which I thought was a nice way to put it. So he brought some fanciness into it.
Yeah, there's a store down the road on Peachtree that sells like lifestyle goods, and I'm somebody who has no conception of what that even means. I think Louis would know, though. He's interesting, though. You know, this you mentioned he thought he could rule like a dictator. That extended to all sorts of things, not just control of the country, but he imposed his artistic taste on all of France. He nurtured talents of the writer Molière and made him write all this stuff that was supporting the monarchy and supporting the king. He supported the painter Rigaud. And in doing this, a lot of people say that Louis helped French culture attain the same level of respect that the Italians had. It elevated the country.
True, and it seems that he wasn't just a dilettante in doing all this either. He seems to have actually had a true love for the arts. Fun fact, he himself was an accomplished ballet dancer and even performed at court in costume and everything, which, I mean, just imagining this king who participates in wars and fights, and on the side, he's also a very elegant artist.
I've actually seen a picture of him as a teenager dressed in his Sun King costume, which is like a gold flaming costume with points radiating out from it. I wonder if it was a ballet costume.
Could have been. So, again, he had control over every little detail. He decides not only when they go to war and economic things, but he decides what's beautiful and what etiquette should be, and he imposes these tastes on everybody. And he also uses it in a way to get what he wants politically.
Yeah, so we're going to go back to those nobles who rose up when he was a young boy against the monarchy. And Louis didn't forget these guys, and he didn't forget the circumstances that created a problem like that. So he drew the noblemen into court, and he tried to keep them there, and he tried to keep them occupied with frivolous things like gambling. And he really took note, careful note, of who was there and who wasn't. So if you were usually there and then one day you were missing, Louis demanded to know why you had been gone. If you were in and out all the time, he needed a good excuse from you. And if you weren't around at all, you were in trouble. That was really, really bad. There was probably no good excuse for being constantly absent from court.
Yeah, and if you were one of those people who was never there, you would have a really hard time getting what you wanted, because that's kind of how the king decided things. He would, if you approached him, for example, and you said, I need more land or something, but if you were one of those people who weren't around a lot, he was known to say things like, he is a man I never see. And that would sort of be the end of it. You wouldn't get what you wanted because you hadn't been in the favor of the king.
Might as well just stay at your castle at that point. So being at court and sticking to the king's rules of etiquette became really essential for nobles who wanted to get anywhere in life. You couldn't essentially be your own king anymore with your own vassals and your castle and your land and your army. You had to be at court watching Louis eat.
Right, so it basically made nobles less of a presence in politics. All of this becomes even more complicated when he moves the court from Paris to Versailles. In Versailles, it was easier for him to keep track of people there, and it made the court more isolated, too.
Yeah, so he started going to Versailles originally to carry out a love affair with his mistress, Mademoiselle de La Valliere. And, I mean, he was quite the womanizer. I think that's one thing we all know.
Even though he was already married.
He was married to the daughter of the King of Spain. But at that point, when he was visiting Versailles, the structure was basically a hunting lodge. That sounds more rustic than it is. It's still a fabulous country house, but still, it's not like the Versailles you might go visit today. And so in the 1660s, Louis starts transforming it into this enormous palace and architectural wonder. And you have to think, you know, part of it is to bring the nobles there, but also so he has his own stronghold. He's not in danger like he was as a child in Paris.
Yeah, he feels a bit uncomfortable there, so Versailles is sort of an escape for him. But he's often criticized for this because Versailles was so extravagant, the palace at Versailles, that is, and it cost so incredibly much. Some say that it practically ruined the nation. It was somewhere around the price of a modern airport, so just imagine that for a second. But actually, nobody knows for sure how much it cost, because the king is rumored to have destroyed the bill after he saw how much it was and realized that, oh my gosh, I spent way too much on this thing.
I feel like that's something Blondie would do. But even so, you think if it costs as much as a modern airport, all of the nobles who were staying there would be in pretty nice quarters, at least. That wasn't the case. I mean, it was the lap of luxury for the royal family, but the other guests, and sometimes there were as many as 1,000 people there, were put into these really small, cramped rooms that were too hot or too cold for the season. I mean, this is not the servants we're talking about. These are people who are used to living in palaces themselves.
Yeah, and it almost seems, I'm sure it wasn't that bad, but it almost seems like a slum having to live right on top of each other.
Remember your place.
Definitely. So this is just all to set up the scene for the king at the height of his rule. By the 1670s, around 1680 or so, he's been doing well in wars, he's adored by his court, and he's just generally living large out in Versailles. But we're going to backtrack just a little bit to explain sort of his situation with his mistresses and everything that's going on. So back in 1667, he'd taken on a new mistress, the Marquise de Montespan, and they'd been together for years, and they even had 7 kids together, one of whom died. So the remaining 6 kids, they are legitimized. And she had been a lady-in-waiting to the queen, and she was married to the Marquis de Montespan, with whom she had 2 kids also. Her husband didn't really like what was going on between her and the king, and apparently expressed that somehow, because he was exiled to Guyane in 1668 and legally separated from her shortly after that. the king and the Marquise de Montespan go on to be together for about 13 years, but it really doesn't last when Montespan is implicated in a scandal, one of the most notorious criminal cases of the 17th century, in fact, the Affair of the Poisons.
So this whole scandalous episode actually starts back in 1673 when the Comte de Soissons, who's the husband of Olympe Mancini, who's the former favorite of Louis XIV, and if we're really going to keep track of everything, the niece of Cardinal Mazarin. So when the Comte de Soissons dies in these strange circumstances that suggested poisoning, people start talking. You know, it's interesting news. So right around the same time as this Comte de Soissons story, another big case was going down in Paris. The Marquise de Brinvilliers, who was an aristocrat, had been found to have poisoned her father and her brothers and to have made attempts on other members of her family, including her husband. Essentially, it seemed like she was trying to kill every male family member and get their money. And there was a lover who left behind evidence incriminating both of them. And Brinvilliers had also knocked off a few inmates in the charity hospital, testing out her poisons on them, you know, posing as this do-gooder noblewoman.
Walking through the halls of the charity hospital.
Yeah, really seeing if her stuff was potent enough to kill her own family. Those are two big stories going. You can imagine today they'd be on the cover of all the tabloids. This is what people are obsessed with at the time.
And just so you understand the situation a little better, there are a couple things that are going on around this time also that sort of set up the scene a little bit. Poisons, for one, are more readily available, especially arsenic. And these poisons are also very hard to detect because there's no pathology around at the time. There's no CSI. There's no bones. And so nobody really, it's very easy to both use it as a way to kill somebody and also just use it as a possible accusation against somebody. For example, somebody dies and you could just say, oh, I think they were poisoned, because there's no really way to prove whether or not they were. So there's a lot of this going on.
So it's an upgrade from the Tudor pushing them down the stairs method.
And also, the other thing going on is that these nobles we mentioned, whose fates were so closely tied to the king's favor, they started turning to fortune tellers, magicians, renegade priests, conjurers, basically the occult in general, to try to improve their fortunes and also thwart their enemies at court. And this was probably especially true for women at the time, just because for a lot of them, this was the only way for them to be free and wealthy, becoming a widow.
Yeah, so getting rid of your husband or other male family members. So Brinvilliers is caught in 1676 and she's tried and executed. But before she dies, she's said to have said something kind of interesting and kind of scary to a lot of people in France. She said, quote, "Half the nobility are at it as well. If I wanted to speak out, I could destroy them."
Dum, dum, dum.
Yeah, exactly. So suddenly people are suspicious. Who is she talking about? Who else is at it?
Right. So a couple of sort of shady situations happen in the meantime. I think that after that, there's an attempt on the king and nothing really comes of it. But then this situation, the Affair of the Poisons, erupts into a full-blown scandal in 1679 when the police apprehend a couple of working-class women who claim to have been selling poisons to duchesses, marquises, princes, and lords. And they immediately begin to implicate other people in their class, including a fortune teller known as La Voisin. She was a fortune teller to some of the most illustrious names in France. So this was a problem.
Yeah, and these three ladies start mentioning some other very important names. This story keeps spreading.
So basically, Louis and his people decide they need to do something about it. So with Louis's approval, one of his ministers sets up a secret investigative tribunal known as the Commission of the Arsenal. And the goal there is to look into and try some of the cases involving the more important names involved. And this was both to preserve discretion in these situations and also to prevent the guilty from escaping justice because they were so close to the king. So essentially, you don't want this to get out to just everybody and their brother in Paris, because it's just going to cause a lot of commotion and
terribly embarrassing.
Right. So they want to keep it on the down low. They set up this tribunal and start trying people.
But they also don't want somebody to get away with poisoning their whole family just because they happen to be the king's friend.
True.
But then in September 1679, the Marquise de Montespan's name starts being thrown around in connection with this whole affair. So this has gotten very serious all of a sudden.
Very close to the king, too.
Yeah, the woman who is just about the closest person in the world to the king is linked to this shady underworld of poisons and alchemy and all sorts of things.
Yeah, and her accusations go pretty deep. She's accused of four things. She's accused of buying love potions from La Voisin to retain her hold over the king. She's also accused of participating in black masses, which were basically blasphemous, burlesque-type masses performed by satanic cults. And in those black masses, she was accused of having a priest cut the throats of children over her, basically using her naked belly as an altar. And the purpose was the same, to retain the king's favor. The third accusation was that she had attempted to kill one of her rivals using a pair of poisoned gloves. Some reports also reported that it was with poisoned milk that she attempted to poison her rival. And the fourth accusation was that she had attempted to kill the king himself. So that was kind of the most serious one.
I still can't get over the black masses one.
Yeah, that's pretty gross.
Pretty serious and gross. But no, it's suspected that the accusers cooked up a lot of this because they knew that Louis wouldn't let anything happen to the mother of his kids, this woman who is so publicly linked to him. And I mean, they might have been right to a certain extent. He didn't want her name to get out so much with, say, a public execution of some of these serving class women who are involved. So I guess they played their cards.
They definitely did, and I think you were right. I think they were absolutely correct in what they did. Louis had everything covered up. He had notes from interrogations that were kept on separate sheets instead of a ledger. He specifically ordered for that to be that way, and of course, most people suspect, and I think this actually happened or is supposed to happen, that he destroyed the sheets later on to destroy the evidence. And on October 1st, 1680, following the execution of a Madame Philostra, Louis decided to suspend sessions of the Commission of the Arsenal. And many believe this is because Philostra made damaging allegations against Montespan.
So, yeah, it wasn't just La Voisin talking about her anymore. It was a noblewoman, and things were getting out of Louis's control.
Right.
By then, the Commission of the Arsenal had already judged 104 cases, and 34 of the accused were executed. Two were condemned in absentia, and four were sent to the galleys. 34 sentences involved banishment or financial amends, and 30 were acquitted. So, pretty serious results from this tribunal.
But it takes a couple years to wind down. It takes a while to finish up all the executions and the sentencing of people who were guilty and send them to their various prisons and places that they need to go. But by 1682, there was also a sort of positive result of this affair of the poisons. It led to the first legal restrictions on the sale of poisons in France. So something good got to come out of it anyway.
Yeah, it couldn't go poison the people in the poor hospital anymore quite so easily. It's still a mystery how guilty the Marquise de Montespan really was. I mean, most people now think that she probably didn't have any designs on killing the king. That sounds extremely reactionary. I mean, she would have nothing to gain from killing the king. In fact, she would probably lose most of what she had, as mistresses often did. But she probably did drink love potions and participate in some of these black masses.
A lot of people think that she did.
A lot of people think, yeah. But either way, her relationship with the king definitely ended shortly after this whole thing blew up. I guess perhaps he couldn't trust her anymore, or he lost interest after finding out about all of the blood and the altars.
Well, I think he just needed to change his image a little bit. He was getting
get away from that
bad reputation, and he was a devout Catholic and really needed to kind of rein it back in.
Yeah, and his reputation definitely did change. In fact, the way court ran started to change a lot, too. Gambling and entertainment still took place, but they took place underneath this veneer of propriety. It's a little hypocritical, but Louis himself was getting older, too, and yeah, just trying to change his image and reform publicly, at least.
Yeah, as I've seen it described, he actually renounces pleasure, but kind of funny if you think of it at the same time he took up a new mistress. So I don't know how that works.
And
but
Katie and I talked about her in an earlier episode, Madame de Maintenon. And it's interesting. They're not quite sure if he took up a mistress or if they were secretly married before anything started happening. But anyways, they lived together until his death.
Yep, he dies in 1715 at the age of 77, and he actually lives so long, he's been on the throne for so long, that he's outlived his son and his grandson, so leaving the question of who will become heir, and that takes us to a good stopping place, I think, for our next installment, which may or may not have something to do with Louis the 15th, his heir.
Keep going on these numbers.
We'll just keep trucking along. I mean, there's so much you can do. We could probably turn this into a year-long series. Don't worry, we probably won't.
Yeah.
But there just seems to be a lot of good ideas.
I like talking about the royals in the winter for some reason. It just feels right, knowing they're probably all cold in Versailles.
Shivering in their rooms without heat.
We're cold in
all
Atlanta.
All 1,000 of them. Yeah, we're
snowed
cold.
In.
Snowed in Atlanta.
But yeah, I guess that about wraps it up for the Sun King. We've recommended how royalty works so many times now, so I don't know. You can just
how the French Revolution works?
Oh, yeah. That's good.
Okay.
So I guess that about wraps it up for the Sun King and the Affair of the Poisons. But you can always suggest more Louis topics or more bourbon topics to us on Twitter at Mistin History, on Facebook, or by emailing us at historypodcast@howstuffworks.com. And if you want to jump ahead, see what happens a little bit, we do have an article called How the French Revolution Worked. You can find it by searching for French Revolution on our homepage at www.howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. To learn more about the podcast, click on the podcast icon in the upper right corner of our homepage. The How Stuff Works iPhone app has arrived. Download it today on iTunes.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Managing your diabetes just got easier. The powerful new Dexcom G7 lets you see your glucose numbers on your compatible watch and phone without fingersticks. And because Dexcom G7 is the most accurate CGM system, you can be confident in your food, exercise, and medication decisions. And all those decisions can lead to big results, like more time in range and lower A1C. Get started at Dexcom.com.
Dexcom data on file 2023. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G7 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions. For a list of compatible devices, visit Dexcom.com/compatibility.
There's nothing worse than wearing clothes that don't fit right. That's why Tomboy X makes size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. Queer founded and run for over 10 years, you can trust they know a thing or two about making the perfect pair. Feel comfortable in your own skin. Shop online today and use code IHEART for 20% off your first purchase. Only at TomboyX.com. Tomboy X. Fit for you just as you are.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.